Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wind Women of Wisdom, everyone, and I appreciate your patience as we deal with technology issues. That being said, if I drop out at any time, Emily is going to keep talking. I'll call right back in and we'll just carry on. But welcome to my life. Technology is not working. Anyway, I am blessed enough to have the patient Emily on the other end, and she is a phenomenal graphic designer, and I have seen her work. I haven't personally used her myself, but I have seen her work. She's also an independent published author, and her next book comes out in January, so she's going to talk about. So let me bring Emily on, and we'll take it away.
Hi.
Good morning, Emily.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
I just wanted to ask you, what my first question is, why did you start authoring books / designing book covers?
Why did I start designing book covers? Or
why did you start doing both components?
So my history is that I was always a writer. That's always what I wanted to be. My first book through a small press, and I was also a lawyer before I was able to become a writer full time. And basically, it just wasn't a good relationship with that small press. It was very hard to negotiate the contracts, and so I felt kind of stalled out in my career before independent publishing started up. And once independent publishing became a option for authors, I jumped on the bandwagon, you know, sort of as fast as I could. But I didn't have a ton of money at that point. My husband was doing his PhD, and we were living in London on his student stipend with two kids. And so I shelled out as much as I could on my books, but I also tried to figure out how much I could do for myself. And that's how I figured out that I was able to design book covers. Although, you know, having said that, it always is a matter of finding the right fit with a cover designer. So I don't have any books out now that have my covers on them, but I did spend a lot of time learning the principles of design. And I just happened to have a very good friend who had been, she was a graphic designer, and she had done a lot of magazine works and magazine layouts and magazine covers. And so it was just perfect timing because she didn't just teach me graphic design, but the specific rules of design on a book cover, which are a little bit different than graphic design in general.
Oh, yes, they are. Oh, yes, they are. It's not, you're dealing with a whole different kettle. Just slash a smaller canvas to work with. And so,
yes.
You're dealing with a smaller canvas slash a more creative canvas, more criticizing canvas. Let's just put it that way, because if people don't like the book cover, they are not going to pick up the book, no matter how well it's edited.
Right. People do judge a book by its cover. There's just no getting away from that.
Yes, cover. Anyway, you say the old adage, don't judge a book by its cover, but people do judge a book by its cover. So I don't know if the old adage stands in on-demand publishing or not. Don't judge a book by its cover. But a lot of these cover designers like yourself could all jump in on bandwagon with all of us and doing independent publishing or print on demand.
Yeah, sorry, I it cut out for just a moment. So can you repeat the last part of the question?
I was going to say all these publishers are now using print on demand aspect. I mean, I don't know if the traditional publishers going to last in the next 2 years. And that leads me to my next question. Why did you not go with a traditional publisher?
Well, quite frankly, what I write is a little bit quirky. And I never felt that traditional publishers were treating me unfairly. But a traditional publisher has a very high overhead, and obviously they need to publish books that are going to start selling and start selling fast. And so, I mean, you know, what I would get in the rejection letters was always that my writing showed promise, but what I wrote wasn't marketable. And it's something I've made my peace with. So independent publishing made sense for me because I could keep the overhead down a little bit. And by making higher royalties, I can make a good living off of fewer sales. So I think publishing is definitely in a state of flux, and I think there are definitely some publishers that are not going to last in the long term. I also think independent publishing, though, is probably going to give rise to new publishers as well, simply because I think there will always be a place in the market for editors who are very good at picking winners, which to a certain extent is what traditional publishers are. You know, they are able to look at a book and not with 100% accuracy, but with enough accuracy to stay in business, pick those books that are going to sell in the kind of volume that will support their staffs of editors and publicity departments and hiring out the cover designers and the typesetters and all of these things. So I tend to write, especially my romance tends to be very ironic, sort of a, not mocking the genre, but definitely pointing out some of what I perceive as absurdities of it. And there's only so many people who want to read that, which is fine by me. I love them. I'm so glad I found them. But at this point, even now, there's not enough of them to support the running costs and the overhead costs of a traditional publisher.
Well, do you think you would ever transfer genre, write in a completely different manner?
Well, so I write science fiction and fantasy. That's what I started out in. And that I have done some indie publishing of that as well. But I have stayed pretty close to the traditional model on that one. So right now I'm rewriting an old novel that an agent has asked to see. And I plan to keep going down that road with my science fiction and fantasy. So in a way, I guess I already have. And I originally started writing romance because I saw that I could get published by this particular small publishing house that I was finally published by. And then once I started, I kept doing it. But yeah, I do write in these two different genres, and I do hope that my science fiction and fantasy can reach that level of marketability that a traditional publisher would be interested in.
Well, why did you choose science fiction and fantasy?
I grew up in Los Alamos, New Mexico, which is, well, it's where the Manhattan Project took place, and it's a company town, and the company is Los Alamos National Laboratory. So everybody's parents are physicists and engineers. And it's 20,000 people, and if you average the number of years of education of everybody, including newborns, it's 12.9 years. Lots and lots of PhDs.
Wow.
And lots of technology. And so I'm not really joking when I say I think what was normal life for me probably is science fiction for the rest of the world. That's just what I grew up around. And, you know, I'm old enough that I saw Star Wars Return of the Jedi in its original release. And, you know, there's just so much great science fiction and fantasy in the last 40 years that, you know, I've just been caught up in it. And I just love it.
So, okay, why did you stop using your own covers for your own books?
I actually think that I'm a little too close to my own books to create effective covers. Because the thing about a cover is that it needs to be a, you know, a 1 second impression. People have to look at it and immediately get an idea. And I, knowing myself, it takes me forever just to be able to write the log line for my book. I sort of have to get it all the way written and then think about it and pace back and forth just to be able to come up with, you know, that one sentence that encapsulates what the book is about. And a book cover needs to express that visually. So I actually think it makes sense, even if you are a cover designer, to hire out your cover design, because what you need is a third party to say, okay, you know, I hear what your plot is, but this is the marketable thing. This is the image that is going to be effective for that cover. The principles of cover design are actually the same as principles of advertising posters. Essentially, it's a little poster ad on the front of your book. And so having somebody with a little bit of distance.
I'm going to use that line against you. I'm going to use that line against you. Because when I first started my company long before the digital publishing boom, let's just put it that way, I was a self-taught digital artist. I still have my artwork. People love my artwork, and people ask me all the time, why do you not want to do artwork, let alone your book covers? And I agree with you. I think I'm a little bit too close to my books to then be doing the cover. I wish I could, but I agree with you. On my last novel, it was my artwork, but then I decided that it would never be my artwork again because it was too close to home. So I agree with you in that sense that we all too close to our books. So who is your cover designer, and do you like what she's doing with your books now?
So I've used different cover designers. The woman who designs the covers from a fairy tale series, which makes up the bulk of my income, and that's the next book in that series is what's coming out in January, is Sarah Hansen, who is just one of the top indie cover designers. She broke out early with designing covers for a lot of bestsellers. She's got a ton of experience, and you know, her covers, I think, what I always say is that a cover won't sell your book, but a bad cover will kill the sales of your book. It's really a matter of looking for somebody who designs a cover that gives your book the best chance. It's not a roadblock in any way. It exactly positions it in the market so that the right people are going to see it. And she just has a ton of experience with that. She has come up with a concept for my covers that I never would have thought of. And it's a concept that works very well for a series. She's able to carry it from the first and the second and the third book. So the first book has had three different covers, but it's had her cover for the longest. It seems to endure. And then I have also indie published a little fantasy serial, and for that I actually commissioned original artwork from a very talented artist who's also a friend of mine named Rhea Golden. And she is known as mainly for her work in graphic novels. She's a Hugo-nominated graphic novelist, and so it was great to be able to work with her because we do know each other fairly well, and she lives here in Santa Fe, so we're able to meet up and talk about just the basic ideas for the series and everything like that. I've been blessed to be able to find some really incredible cover designers. Having said that, there's a ton out there. I mean, there's so many great cover designers out in the market right now. It's actually kind of exciting.
Exactly. And as I said, I know New York Times bestselling authors and USA Today bestselling authors, well, all they do is self-publish their book because they don't want to deal with the middleman, and they don't want to deal with the finances from the middleman either, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think publishing independently is the next best thing to strike plan. And I know there's music outlets, I know movies, I know books. I haven't necessarily explored music outlets yet, but I know movies, and people just seem to love the independent boom, and Amazon is the next instance choice led. But what I wanted to ask you is, how do you feel about being exclusive to Amazon? I know there's some of us out there who like our books everywhere. Others do not, for the higher loyalty. But how do you feel about this?
I have chosen not to be exclusive to Amazon, but I think that's just very much goes along with my personality. I don't make a ton of money from investing, but I do investing on the side as well. And I just really believe in spreading your, hedging your bets and not putting all of your eggs in one basket. There are a lot of rumors about Amazon having too much power and having the power to be evil, but two things on that. First off, while the people who run Amazon may not be, angels, I think there's ample evidence that they are on the side of good, in that if they wanted to be evil, they just have so much power to do that. The world would be a noticeably worse place if Amazon were choosing actively to be evil and to work against people. And then second of all, I think Amazon, if they tried to sort of turn against independent authors, it's the industry's to a point where I don't think they would be able to kill their own monster at this point. There's just too many independent authors with too much market power to be able to be taken down by Amazon, to be taken down by one platform going down. And these authors have their own fan bases, and so would be able, I think, to migrate to any other platform. And they might take some losses, but I think they would stay afloat. And so I really think the balance of power isn't quite as uneven as people portray it when they talk about Amazon. Be careful of them. They're so evil. If they were boycotted by a lot of their top independent authors, that would hurt them. And I think those top independent authors would have the power to be able to stay afloat. And it's a very mutually supportive community. So I think that, I can't tell you exactly what would happen if Amazon decided to cut everybody's royalties or anything like that. But I think you'd see a lot of mutual support and authors helping each other out and helping them find new platforms. They do have a lot of power. They could certainly impact our incomes in a very big way, but I don't think they could destroy independent publishing.
So that being said, where are your books located, and how much money do you make off, let's say, iBooks or let's say Amazon? Because I am just curious. That's just a curiosity question. Do you make about the same on Amazon and iBooks?
I make about 2/3 of my income from Amazon. And then the second biggest source of income right now is iBooks, but that might be overtaken by Tolino, which is a German ebook distributor. So my books are also translated into German. I've got a translator. He and I just work really well together. And so a decent portion of income comes in from the German translations.
And how did you find the German translator, man?
You got really lucky.
You've got really lucky. Well,
yeah, so
for the listeners out there who are listening to this podcast, how would we go about finding a translator in German, or I had one in Spanish who's willing to do it, Italian? How would we go find an Italian translator?
I may not be able to give any real good advice. I literally got super lucky. So I had been publishing science fiction short stories that I had sold to magazines, and I had the rights back as I was publishing those on Amazon. And this German guy emails me and asks if he could translate some of them into German. And I forewarned him that short stories in general don't really sell. They don't really sell in volume on Amazon or in any of the markets, really. I mean, you make a few bucks off of them, and translation is not an easy job. But he wanted to try it, and so, again, being a former lawyer, I wrote up the contracts and, you know, so that we had an agreement where he would make as much money as possible under it. And he translated the short stories, and they didn't sell great. I mean, we really weren't making much money off of them at all. And, you know, I would have understood if he had just said, you know, it's nice meeting you and that was fun. But he decided instead to double down and translate someone else's fairy tale, my Chicklet novel. And, you know, I said, sure, you know, why don't we try that? So the translation deal we have is that I pay him about 10% of his fees up front, and then he makes all of the royalties until we earn out the rest of his fee, and then we split the royalties. I'm very generous on that last part because I really do think that a good translator is basically a co-author. It's not enough to have somebody who just knows the language. It's the person has to have some writing talent of their own. And so he translated someone else's fairy tale, and that worked, you know, and that actually started making good money. And then when he translated the second one, Nobody's Damsel, we released that one, and both those two books hit the Kindle Top 100 in Germany. And fairy tale stayed up there. Yeah, fairy tale stayed up there for 6 weeks, and so we earned out his fees, and you know, and so we've been working together ever since, and it's really been fantastic. But it was absolutely a stroke of luck that this guy emailed me. People are quite welcome to email me, and I'm happy to pass any questions along to my translator, Michael. He also has a day job, so he just translates for me and for Susan K. Quinn, who's a science fiction author. But he's definitely tapped into that side of the industry. Well, and the funny thing about it was that when these books took off, he was in a day job that he didn't particularly love. And these books made him enough money that he could take time off from a day job, basically. So he resigned from that particular job. And then what was even funnier is that when he was marketing these books, he was contacting book bloggers around Germany, and one lived local to him. And so they met up in a coffee shop and hit it off really well. And so they even, you know, I don't know if they're still living together, but so his girlfriend he had met through this novel. And so it's just really funny how well it worked out. Yeah, it was just really...
goodness.
Really serendipitous.
Oh, my goodness. Well, if anyone's with me and wants to help me, and you could always find my book and email me, and we'll figure it out. But right now, I'm in the process of doing ACX myself, which is an interesting journey. Have you ever considered... producing the audiobook on ACX?
I actually was in process getting someone else's fairy tale done as an audiobook. ACX, though, was having some technical issues, and so communication between me and the voice actress just really got slowed down. And so I do, that's still something I need to figure out how to wrap up. She's done a certain amount of work, and I definitely want to make sure that she's paid for it. I don't know if at this point it's a project that she wants to finish. But so basically, yeah, I have gone through ACX, and, you know, one thing about being an independently published author is trying to keep all of the balls in the air that you're juggling. And so that's one that that is currently in the air that I need to catch and sort of deal with. But,
catch and finish up.
Yeah. Yeah, I do want to get my books out as audiobooks. I'm not 100% sure that ACX is necessarily the best model at this point. And so it's not just that I need to get that locked down, but I also need to go back and start doing research to see what is most effective for my particular genre at this particular point in time.
really, because I'm coming to quickly discover there's so many audiobook platforms out there that I am also thinking that ACX isn't the best model because their parent company is Amazon, and it's good. You can buy anything on Amazon, and even though I love Create, ACX, that's a little too much for me. So I have to research on my own to figure out the ACX platform. But I've been really lucky with ACX. I've found phenomenal producers. I just have to see whether it's another audio book platform that would help me out. But with ACX, you get to sell your books in all different countries, but still, they're not in the native languages. So I'm looking for the native languages. I'm not necessarily looking for the English language. I'm looking for the native languages, which I wish ACX.
Well, I mean, I thought they did have some, you know, nominally they did have something for narrators of other languages, but if I remember correctly, there wasn't a whole lot of options on there at the time. And the other thing about working with another language is that it helps to have at least a friend who speaks it, who can explain a few things. Because, I don't know what the different dialects of German sound like. You know, if somebody's speaking German to me, I am lucky if I can recognize that it's German, you know, versus Dutch.
Yeah.
You know, and so I could very easily do the equivalent of, say, a foreign language author getting an English narration, hiring like somebody with a really deep Scottish accent or something, you know, and which, it would be understandable in, you know, in Britain and parts of the United States, but you would not be able to penetrate markets of, say, like the Deep South with that because the two dialects are just too far apart. And so, yeah, it just always takes a ton of research to be able to sort of equip yourself to be able to do these things. Yeah.
We should. So where can people find you and where can people find your book?
So my books are on all the major ebook retailers. And the paperbacks can be ordered through any bookstore. They're in the national distribution, as any books published by CreateSpace are. Online, I've got two websites, www.emtippetts, and I'll spell my last name. It's T-I-P-P-E-T-T-S .com. Is where you'll find all of my chick lit and links to, you know, my books and everything like that. And then science fiction and fantasy, I still write under my maiden name because I started before I ever met my husband or got married. And so www.emilymah.com is my science fiction and fantasy self. And on my website is my blog, and mostly what you see posted there is I'm also an audio blogger, audio/video blogger for a site called The Black Gate. So that's where my interviews for that are posted, as well as, of course, The Black Gate and YouTube. And what I do there is I interview people in the industry, both traditional and independently published, and I ask them basically what their story is, how they got into their careers, you know, what they've learned along the way. And so what I'm doing is I'm sort of building up on YouTube a database of author stories of how they did what they do and what worked for them. And so what I hope to develop there is just a nice resource. So if somebody is thinking, I want to know about this or that, they can go and find the interview, and then each interview is broken down with links to sections of the interview. So if the interview is, say, you know, an hour long, but they're only interested in about 20 minutes of it, they can jump right to that 20 minutes to be able to listen to it.
How cool is that? How cool is that you're doing that? And what's the response upon that?
Well, you know, it's every now and then I'll interview a fairly big name, and I get a lot of hits on that. I've been in science fiction and fantasy for long enough that I've got a pretty solid network, and so I know a lot of people. And frankly, what I'm also doing is calling up my friends and talking to them and recording it for other people's benefit. But I haven't worked particularly hard on pushing the YouTube channel or anything like that. It's something that I'm just sort of doing, and I'm going to let grow at its own rate. On the Black Gate, I've had my interviews be in the top five in hits for the month. That's happened quite a few times. So from within the community, it's been spectacular. And from the wider world, you know, I hope there's an audience out there. But I'm willing to also wait for them to find it.
Yeah. Yep. You kind of have let things grow naturally on, you know. And I know I am subscribed to one of your newsletters way back when. And I happened to stumble across your name from Book Coach Heather Hildebrand, and she told me about your graphic design work at the time. And and so I know I'm subscribed to your science fiction and fantasy newsletter, and you guys, I think you should check this woman out. She's phenomenal at what she does, and I'm sorry that she's out of the class of science work now, but I wish you the best of luck with publishing your own book.
And you, with yours. I mean, your story is incredibly inspirational, so it's been an honor. Thank you so much.
And I am grateful for Emily coming on today, and I'm grateful for you guys to support Emily and support me. And my big tip and what Emily and I talked about is supporting independent published authors. I mean, this movement is huge. This movement is literally huge, and it's going to be huge, and it's just going to be huge. And just be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you wish for. I did not know my journey would be. Anyway, that's the such point. Emily's going to make me cry now. But just be careful what you wish for, and always lend your books out to everywhere, because you get better results, you guys. So that's my piece of advice for the day. And always spread your books out. You can either do it through drafttodigital.com or Smashwords or simply on Kindle. But as we said, it's easier if you spread your books out. And so thanks to you guys for tuning in to another fabulous episode. And I hope to inspire you with more fascinating interview. Thanks to you guys.